Do you swear on the Constitution of the United States to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
This is Police Radio,
the voice of American law enforcement,
with your host, Randy Sutton.
Hello and welcome to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Thanks so much for joining me. We have a great show for you today. I have a guest from the state of New Jersey who's going to be talking about an issue that he's facing, but it is pervasive throughout the United States, and it is about leadership. It's all about leadership. But before we get to that, let's take a walk into the briefing room where I'm going to share my view from the blue.
The briefing room, headlines, stories, and all that touches American law enforcement.
First of all, there has been another blow to the persecution and prosecution of law enforcement officers who are being overcharged for crimes or even being charged at all for crimes when they get involved in officer-involved shootings. This latest blow came to the politically motivated prosecutor of Hamilton County, Ohio. His name is Joe Dieters. Now, when this officer-involved shooting took place, the officer's name is Ray Tensing, and he was a university police officer, made a car stop while he was talking to the suspect. Turned out the suspect had a bunch of dope in the car. He didn't have a driver's license. He had warrants. And the guy took off, dragging the police officer who shot and killed the suspect. White police officer, black suspect, and once again, this became a racially charged issue. And before the investigation, once again, was even complete, the prosecutor of Hamilton County came out and announced that he was going to charge this officer with murder. It was absolutely absurd. It's something we have seen time and time again with politically motivated prosecutions. Now, this officer's life is ruined. He was terminated, of course. He faced not only one trial, but two trials. And both times, the juries refused to convict him. The first time, the prosecutor came out and said that he had additional evidence and he was gonna take this to the mat and he'd prosecute him no matter what. Well, he got his butt handed to him again. And this shows exactly what's been taking place all over the country. It's now taking place in New York right now, where a police sergeant, an NYPD sergeant, answered a call of a disturbed woman with a weapon. She was an elderly woman, elderly black woman. The officer was white. We're seeing a pattern here, aren't we? And this woman came after the officer with a pair of scissors. He was able to talk her down and de-escalate it and get the scissors away from her. And as he approached her, she now grabbed a baseball bat and tried to hit him with the baseball bat, at which point he fired a service weapon and he killed her. This is what police officers are trained to do. If someone is trying to kill you or trying to severely injure you, you have a right and a duty to protect yourself. That's all this police sergeant did. Well, the Bronx district attorney has now charged him with murder. Not even involuntary manslaughter, something that could even be fathomed as being something reasonable, but murder. Now, why is she doing that? Because it appeals to her base of people, and she's looking for re-election. But she's playing with the lives of police officers. And this officer, luckily, is being backed by his union, the Sergeant's Benevolent Association, which is a very strong union for the police in NYPD. He's also getting national support from law enforcement officers all over the country, which is something that needs to be done on a continual basis. But once again, a politically motivated prosecution has failed, this time in Ohio, just as it did in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And it has been the pattern we have seen over and over and over again. Now, this is part of the war on cops. When I talk about the war on cops, it's not just the physical dangers that are taking place. It's not just the physical attacks, but it's the attacks by the media, it's the attacks by politicians, and it is the attacks by prosecutors. And this is a perfect example of the war on cops. I've spoken about a city councilman in Jackson, Mississippi before because of his outrageous anti-law enforcement comments, but now we have seen the results of his calls for violence. This is a councilman named Kenneth Stokes. Kenneth Stokes is a city councilman in Jackson, Mississippi. Now, a short time ago, there was a police incident involving a pursuit that went into Jackson, Mississippi from a neighboring jurisdiction. Now, this isn't uncommon. You begin a pursuit in one town and it takes you to another. That's normal. Well, that's what happened, and for some reason that angered this city councilman. And at the time, he came out with some of the most outrageous statements not only condoning, but inciting violence against law enforcement. He came out and said that the citizens should rise up, and when they see the police, throw rocks, bottles, and bricks at them. When he was taken to task for these absolutely irresponsible, violent incitements, he basically gave one of the most inane press conferences I've ever seen in my life. I mean, this guy doesn't have an IQ that reaches double digits. He's an idiot, and he sounds like an idiot. And besides his actions, which reveal he's an idiot, he gives this press conference that makes no sense whatsoever. He's clearly had this press conference stacked with people that are supporters of his asking him questions. I mean, it was just an idiocy to watch. Well, now the chickens have come home to roost, though, because just days ago, a off-duty Jackson, Mississippi police officer was in his home with his wife, and people unknown opened fire on his house, forcing him and his wife to get down and look for cover. More than 30 rounds were fired from several different weapons into the home of this police officer. Now, is there a correlation between what this city councilman incited as far as violence towards the police, or was he targeted for some other reason? That's something we really don't know. But the undersheriff of the county came out and lambasted this guy Stokes for those incitements and for calling for violence against the police, and this idiot councilman goes on the media again, gives another ridiculous press conference, and he calls the undersheriff, I'm going to quote this now, okay, a hoghead lying bastard. Well, I got to tell you, that's a curse I've never heard before. It's pretty industrious, almost comical. If this man wasn't an elected official and has a responsibility to not only the people that he was elected by, but also to the people who serve in the community, those police officers who he just incited violence against. This is an individual who should not hold office. He should be removed, and there should be action taken against him. Unfortunately, I'll bet you that he gets reelected again and again and again because he's appealing to people in his constituency that also share his views, and that is probably the biggest problem with this whole situation. Now, let's go on to Minneapolis. The big news out of Minneapolis, in wake of the shooting of the woman who was reporting a crime, which has just stirred all kinds of trouble, the police chief, Janie Hartaux, has resigned. Now, If you've listened to this broadcast previously, I have spoken at length about this Minneapolis chief of police and also the mayor, Betsy Hodges, both of whom are truly incompetents, people who never should have held the offices that they did. The police chief and the mayor were both filmed after the events of Ferguson, after the lives of Hands Up, Don't Shoot were spawned such hatred against police. They were seen doing the Hands Up, Don't Shoot dance with a bunch of girls, and thereby perpetuating the lies. The chief was even in uniform while she was doing it. It was one of the most humiliating things against police I've ever seen. And she has been a strong opponent of officer survival training for law enforcement. She has been a critic of her own police officers when they get involved in shootings. And in essence, she has been a vindictive leader. Let me give you an example of that. The president of the police union, the Police Officers Association in Minneapolis, has criticized her on many occasions because of the way she has handled officer-involved shootings. Well, in order to retaliate against him, she ordered him to never wear his police uniform when he's appearing in public. Why? Simply because this is a way for her to be vindictive against one of her officers. And what it shows is the weak leadership. Well, now she's been forced out because of this incident. Now, why would a chief be forced out of office based on an officer-involved shooting? That's the question, isn't it? Well, first of all, it was part of the issue is that she did a complete 100% disappearing act when the shooting took place. It was controversial from the very start because this unarmed woman in her pajamas is shot to death by a Somali police officer who is very inexperienced, and the events surrounding the death are just really troubling, and the fact that the officer is refusing to cooperate with the investigation. But when it happened, the police chief is the one that should be running interference and at the being at the point of the spear, so to speak, in taking care of the issue. Well, she disappeared. Nobody could find her. And days later, when she did resurface, she claimed that she was up in the mountains backpacking and didn't have good cell service. I mean, talk about a lousy excuse. Well, then it was revealed that there's all kinds of issues at play here. You see, the Minneapolis Police Department, as I said, under Betsy Hodges, the incompetent mayor, and this police chief have been exceedingly liberal. And when they hired the officer, the Somali police officer who was involved in the shooting, who actually shot this woman, they trotted him out like he was the best thing since sliced bread. And they put him in front of the cameras, and they did all this public relations work, and they just made this guy seem like, thank God that we have this Somali police officer here. So now it's being reported that he was put through some type of, and I'm going to quote here, accelerated training program. I don't know what that means, but I can tell you what I'm thinking it means. I'm thinking it means that they were in such a rush to get a face of diversity out there that they unleashed an individual who had not been trained properly. Now, why the shooting took place, it's being investigated by an outside agency, and we'll have to wait and see the results of this investigation. But one thing's for sure, an innocent woman lost her life, and the circumstances surrounding it are very, very odd, and the fact that he's not cooperating with the investigation reveals something, of course. Now, the police chief is gone. Betsy Hodges, the mayor, forced that into being. Now, the next person to go is the mayor herself. She gave a press conference the other day, and it was a spectacle. That's the only word that I can use. She was confronted by angry people at this press conference, and instead of taking charge and getting her message out, she basically turned and surrendered and ran out of the building. It was something to watch, because I've never seen anything so ridiculous looking in my life. And she's the leader of Minneapolis. It once again, it demonstrates how leadership plays such an incredibly important role in either running things right or when things are run wrong. Without proper leadership, the police job is almost impossible to do. Even with a great leader, there's so many difficulties. But when you have somebody that's an incompetent, that has a political agenda instead of moral leadership behind them, then you run into problems time and time again. And here's the ultimate irony. Just months ago, this police chief, Jeannie Harteau, was touted as being, this is going to blow your mind, as the 22nd most powerful woman in the country. Yeah, by a national magazine that said she was the most 22nd or 27th most powerful woman in the country, and they did this big write-up on her leadership and all this other crap. Well, the results are astounding in this, in what took place here in Minneapolis, and she's gone, and I'm happy to see it. Mayor Hodges, I hope you're the next to go. And that, my friends, is my view from the blue for this week. No matter what state you're in, the company to call is JSD Protective Services. I've been really impressed with this company. I've met several of the people who are involved in it, and they are quintessential security officers. They really care about what they're doing. This company does everything you could want when it comes to security. They do courier service. They do armed security. They actually do police functions as well with certain contracts that they have. They are private detectives. They have pretty much everything that you could want when it comes down to security, and they do it really well. These guys truly care about what they are putting out. And the owner, Doug Carter is his name, is one of these people that really cares about who he is protecting, who he is serving, and he takes it really seriously. The big difference is their training. It's incredible. They actually have probably more training than many police departments. JSD Protective Services. You want to find them at 844-663-3611. That's 844-663-3611. JSDProtectiveServices.com.
We are one of the fastest growing podcast and talk radio networks in the world. You're listening to the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. It's where we say, let the silent voices be heard. We stand proudly with the men and women who serve in our armed forces and our law enforcement heroes. Thank you for being part of our family. And we'll see you back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Well, looking good and feeling good are not exactly the same thing. It's just like a car. It may look good from the outside, but what's the inside look like? More importantly than that, what's the inside of your cells look like? That's a question you need to ask yourself. Well, when I started taking Healthy Cell just a few months ago, it has changed my program. I mean, it's boosted my energy. I sleep better, sharper focus. I feel healthier, and hopefully we'll all live longer with improved cells. Well, 90-plus nutrients infused into every cell of your body. Well, this is an exclusive offer for friends of America Out Loud. You can try it today free. When I say free, I mean free. It's our Healthy Cell Pro 7-Day Sample. Free shipping, no risk, no obligation, no credit card required. So this is a complimentary gift from America Out Loud. You can go to healthycell.com/outloudsample or just go to AmericaOutloud.com and click the large banner ad, and our complimentary gift will be on its way to your home.
Welcome to the interview room, Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. I have a guest today, and this guest is from the East Coast. He is at this point, a former police officer, but I think we're going to try and do something about that. And his name is Frank Marchione. Frank, so thanks so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Hi, Randy. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So, Frank, you were a Hightstown, New Jersey police officer for how many years?
Since 2001, from 01. 2001 to June 14th, 2013 was the last day I worked.
Right. Now, you have been in the news a lot. I've been looking at a number of press clippings and everything that has befallen you since you were terminated from your job as a canine officer with the Hightstown Police Department. And much of this has been in the media. So let's just go into, so we don't confuse my listeners. You were terminated from the Hightstown Police Department, correct?
That's correct. September of 2015, I was terminated.
Okay. And under what charge were you terminated for?
Well, the final charge was unfit for duty. Everything else they threw at me was dismissed throughout the 2 years while I was on paid suspension.
Okay, so now that in and of itself is pretty unusual. You were on paid administrative leave for 2 years before you were terminated.
That's correct.
All right, let's go back now. You were a police officer. First of all, how big is the police department of Hightstown, New Jersey?
Well, we were at the time, we were 10 or 11 members. I think right now they're up to about 13 members. But at the time we had, like I said, probably 10 or 11 with a lieutenant who was our highest ranking officer. And we had a civilian director.
Okay. Now, when you ran afoul of the administration of this small police department, there was a lot of stuff going on. What were you originally charged with that brought you eventually to be terminated?
Well, originally they actually didn't tell me anything. They made me use my sick time. I sat home for 2 months while they were burning my sick time. And I finally went and got an attorney. And he sent a letter to them saying, well, look, if he's not in trouble, then he'll be at work on Monday morning. And about an hour later, a sergeant arrived at my house with a suspension letter.
You know, this is getting a little bit confusing already. So
yeah.
You served for about what, 14 years, correct?
Right, and I had 2 years at another department before I came to Hightstown.
Okay, and you were a canine officer.
Yes.
You were the only canine officer.
That's correct.
Okay, when you were originally given that position as a canine officer, did you help to make that? To form that actual part of the police department?
Yes, I actually did everything from getting donations to the first thing I did was actually go to my chief to see if he was interested. And once he said yes, then I hit the ground running and I started talking to the businesses and locals and there was a lot of interest in the canine, and people were very quick to say, hey, I'll promise. I was asking people to give me like promise donations. And, you know, like if this goes through, you know, and they were saying, oh, 300, 500. I was like, oh, wow. I was thinking like $100, you know.
Right.
So it didn't take me very long to have $10,000 promised to me. And I went to the chief, and then I went to council, and they approved it.
All right. I would say that's showing a tremendous amount of initiative. Now, that when that chief was in power, you had no problems, right?
No, other than some minor silly things over the years, but nothing that warranted me being my job being in jeopardy.
Okay, so you worked for this particular chief for how long?
He was actually sworn in as chief 2 weeks after I started, and he retired in August of 2011. So about 10 and a half years I worked with him.
Okay, and there was no major issues?
No.
All right, then who took over the police department?
Well, they end up promoting one of the sergeants to a lieutenant. Right now, because we still have some open litigation still going right now, I don't want to say names, if
okay.
That's okay.
Okay.
But the council had put a lieutenant in charge, and then they hired an outside civilian. And, you know, that's things were just never really good once that happened for me.
Right. Now, this individual who was the lieutenant, who was basically the top sworn officer on the department.
Yes.
You and he had a long time history, did you not?
We were friends for a long time. He was my field training officer when I started, and we were on the same squad for years. And you know, just over the years, and we just seemed to kind of drift apart. And you know, it seemed to me to be around the time I started the canine unit. But yeah, I mean, we were definitely not friends anymore, and that was not good for me.
Yeah, right. That's a matter of
to say the least.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so this individual becomes basically the leader of the police department, except for the civilian.
And, that's correct.
And that's when your troubles really began.
Yes.
Why don't you tell my listeners what took place, and you had an issue brewing with this former friend, a former partner, former FTO, as he went up in the ranks of the police department, but you had some issues with him when he was a sergeant.
Yeah, well, it just kind of started where every time I would get an arrest with the dog, you know, at first it was kind of just banter, you know, oh, you know, even a blind squirrel can find a nut, and, you know, just at first it was kind of teasing, and then it started to get worse, and, you know, finally it started getting to the point where he would just try to embarrass me in front of everybody, and, you know, oh, if you take that to trial, you'll lose, and you know, just always kind of belittling everything I did. And one day I finally called him out, and I said, look, you're a sergeant, you're telling me I won't be able to win this in court. Well, teach me, what am I doing wrong? And when he couldn't answer me, and I kind of embarrassed him in front of everybody, and then that seemed to be like the last straw between him and I. And
that's, you know, when things really started going downhill. That's when things really started going downhill.
Yes.
All right. So when things really started becoming negative between you, how did that affect your working environment?
Well, at that point, I didn't see him so much because I was steady nights being on canine. And at this point, he was now steady days, you know, Monday through Friday. You know, so I very rarely saw him. When I did see him, it was just usually uncomfortable for, for me because he just was not being nice at all to me. And, you know, we did have a day where we were talking about another officer that sat home for a couple of years that was in trouble, that got paid, and then he was allowed to retire. And I made a joke saying, oh, I'll take that deal in a couple of years. And he actually came right over to me and said, that deal will never happen for you. I'll make sure of that when I get you through an internal.
When I get you, okay, hold on a second. So he said, I'll make sure that never happens when I get you through an internal, meaning an internal investigation.
That's correct.
And that eventually actually came to pass, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. about a year and a half later.
All right, let's go to the incident, how it began. You had basically a verbal altercation. An individual who was also with the city or the town as an assistant fire chief had a confrontation with you.
That's correct. Yeah.
Let's talk about that confrontation and how that started the ball rolling.
Okay. I had just gotten to work for night shift. There was two sergeants on day shift that hung over to have a quick meeting with us. So we're in this meeting and the dispatcher happened to come in and say, you know, so-and-so is out here looking for Frank. So we're like, okay, well, we're in a meeting. Tell him I'll be out in a few minutes. So the dispatcher comes back in and says, look, I'm sorry to interrupt, but he seems really agitated. And he said, if you don't come out in 5 minutes, he's going to Monroe. Well, we kind of laughed it off. We thought he meant Monroe police and actually made a joke about it, like, good, thank God, go. And, you know, I found out later, obviously, he was talking about going to Monroe, my home. We end up ending the meeting. I go outside and this individual jumps out of his vehicle and he's a big guy. He's probably 6'2". You know, my belief is he's using stuff he shouldn't be using to get to the size he is. He jumps out of his Jeep and yells from across the parking lot, you know, you MF-er, you slept with my ex-girlfriend a decade ago. I was like, okay. He comes storming up, got right in my face, literally standing about an inch from me, pointing in my face, cursing at me, yelling at me. I looked up. I made sure I was standing on the camera in the camera view, and I put my hands inside my vest, and I just stood there, and I let him vent.
All right, just to be totally candid here, did you actually have a relationship with his? With his girlfriend?
Ex.
With his ex-girlfriend?
Ex-girlfriend. Yeah, yeah.
And how
it was?
How many years before this confrontation took place did that relationship happen?
9 years.
9 years. You had a relationship with this guy's ex-girlfriend 9 years prior, and suddenly he shows up at your police station and he wants to have a confrontation about it?
That's correct, yes.
Did you ever find out why that particular time he chose to be interested in this?
He had apparently, I guess he was still talking to the female, and apparently for some reason she told him that day.
She admitted that you and her had had an affair or a relationship 9 years prior, and even though they weren't going together any longer, he was angered and he approached you at the police station.
That's correct. Yes.
All right. So what was that conversation like?
Well, I just kept, as the same person, I just kept saying, look, you weren't going out with her. This was a long time ago. This was probably almost 10 years ago. And I don't care. It doesn't matter. You know, we were boys. And you know, he just kept saying that over and over. And I'm like, all right, whatever. Just get it off your chest. You just found out. So, okay, it's new to you. And so I was letting him vent. Not a big deal.
Okay. Now, Did he threaten you?
He ended up, one of the sergeants had come out to check on us. And, you know, he was like, hey, is everything okay? And I was like, yeah, everything's fine. Because at that point it was. So he went in his car and actually just sat in his personal car and just waited to make sure we didn't start the fight. But it was after the sergeant left that suddenly he changed his tune. He threatened to break my kneecaps. He threatened to rape my wife so I could picture him inside her for the rest of my life. He told me he was going to he was going to mess with my family for the rest of my life. And
he's making all these threats to you.
I was going
to
quit my job. And if I didn't, he was going to have the girl sign a complaint saying she had sex with me on duty and he would get me fired. He followed that up with, you know, she'll do it because she does everything I tell her. And I said, yeah, that's because you beat her and that's what battered women do.
So you had knowledge that he had a physical altercation with her previously?
Not with her. He had a past where he had incidents with our department before I was a member there, where he had issues with prior girlfriends. He actually has a FRO against him now. So, yeah, you know what? When a guy like that tells me he's going to mess with my family for the rest of my life, I have reason to believe that he's going to hold true to that.
Okay, so and this was while you were in full uniform?
That's correct.
All right. Did you go to your superiors to report this?
At that point, I was the officer in charge. I had the officer that was working with me had about 4 months, maybe 6 months on the job, and we're just two-man squads. So that was it. I was the one in charge.
Did at some point you report this to one of your superiors?
Yes, the first sergeant that had left that checked on us was on the phone with me. He was actually called me on his way home. He lives about an hour away. And I was telling him because, you know, he was like, what's going on? So I was telling him and, you know, we were just talking about it. And, you know, still at that point, Randy, I'm thinking to myself, he's just trying to upset me. This is crazy. This is crazy over me sleeping with your ex-girlfriend at this. You would get that mad.
Okay, now let's. But he did go to your house, didn't he?
He ended up, about an hour later. My wife called me, pretty upset, saying that this individual had stopped at the home. My 7-year-old had, not knowing who he is, answered the door, and he confronted my wife. And now, apparently, when he tried to talk to my wife. He told her it was 10 years ago and she didn't get mad because we weren't together that long. So I guess he got even more frustrated because she wasn't getting upset. And, but right in front of my 7-year-old, he's trying to tell her that now I cheated on her and that I have a whole bunch of girlfriends. And I mean, it was out of control. And, like I said, because my wife didn't have the outburst that he was looking for, I guess that made him even more mad. He was continually texting me throughout the night as well. I had over 30 text messages in a 12-hour period from this guy.
So he goes to your house, he goes into your home, and he tells your wife that you're having affairs and that you slept with his ex-girlfriend. And how long was he in the house?
I'm not sure. My wife, she was, once she got off the phone with me and I told her what happened at the station, she got pretty upset. And she then was, at that point, she then got scared of him because she's actually known him since high school. She's a local girl.
Were your children scared?
I'm sorry?
Were your children scared? Not,
my 7-year-old was crying when she had called me.
Okay, so she called you. She told you that this guy had gone to your house. What did you do?
Well, at that point, I called the one sergeant back who I'd been in contact with. I told him what happened, and he said, look, this is serious now. You need to call the boss. And I actually asked him if I could go home, but he said, look, you got to call the boss because this is way over the top now.
Okay, so you contacted the guy... Who, by the way, this is the same guy that you've been having problems with, who is now the lieutenant.
That's correct.
And you advised him that this guy had gone to your house, had threatened you, had gone to your home, confronted your wife, and you asked to go home.
That's correct.
What did he tell you?
He advised me that the individual had done nothing wrong because my son answered the door, and he said if I left the town, I would be brought up on charges for abandoning my post.
And did you stay at work?
I stayed at work. That's correct.
Okay. And what happened next?
Well, I ended up calling my son back because he wanted me to come home to protect him in case the bad man came back. I had to call him back and tell him I couldn't come home. And when he started crying again on the phone, I ended up hanging up. I called my hometown police, Monroe, asked them to go to my house and check on my family. I then called the court clerk, trying to see if there was, because I never thought about it before, Randy. Like, I've torn a meniscus fighting with someone. I broke a finger fighting with a suspect. I never thought of myself as a victim.
Sure.
This was the first time I actually felt like a victim.
All right. Now, and then this guy started texting you.
Well, yeah, he was continually texting me for like 3-4 hour period.
Were they threatening texts?
Yeah. I mean, one of the ones, like, I haven't looked at them in 4 years because they're too upsetting. But one of the ones I really remember was, "I don't care what happens to me. I'm going to get you and your family."
Now, when you brought this to the attention of your lieutenant, the head of your department.
Yeah, I actually made copies of all the text messages and turned them over to my department looking for help.
And did they do anything?
No, they did not.
They didn't file any charges. They didn't go to the county prosecutor. They did nothing.
They never even investigated him.
Okay. And there came a time when you started having some real issues about this.
Yeah, well, when I got home the next morning, and Monroe police had escorted my family to a neighbor's house because they were scared to stay home without me. When I got home the next morning, my family came home, and my son, even with me home now, was scared to go back in the house. You know, I had to coax him into the house. I had to walk around, show him he wasn't in the house. I ended up calling out the next two nights because I was not going to leave my family again.
Right.
I ended up, Randy, after 4 days, I stayed home for 4 days, not being able to sleep. I was so upset. And on the fourth day of being awake, I made the mistake of texting my lieutenant. I actually texted him the words, "I need you."
And as a result of that, because of your lack of sleep, because of the trauma of the situation, you sought some psychological help.
Yeah, I mean, I was really hoping just to go to a crisis and get something to help me sleep. I was so overtired, I just didn't even know what to do anymore.
Right.
When the lieutenant called me, I told him I wanted to go to crisis, and he eventually came to the house. I don't know how much longer it was, maybe 45 minutes or so after I called him.
Okay.
And
so let's move forward, because we have a limited amount of time.
Yes.
They eventually brought you up on charges based on this incident when the female who you had had an affair with 9 years prior, at the coaxing of this individual, said that you had sex in your police car.
That's correct.
And it was
like he said he would do.
Exactly. And they actually brought you up on charges on that.
Yes, they did.
And what happened with those charges?
They were dismissed outright by the hearing officer that was hired by Hightstown. And I couldn't, Randy. She had given multiple versions. They had continued to change the dates. They didn't even have a date. They had a year. They were trying to make it a year. I mean, the whole thing
Okay, but so these were, charges were eventually dismissed, and then they brought you up on some other charge.
Yes, they kept the fitness for duty. They kind of kept that in the background when they brought the sex on duty stuff up forward. When that got dismissed, they held on to the fitness for duty.
Okay, so they terminated you for that.
Yes.
Okay, and this was after being on suspension for 2 years.
Yeah, 2 years, 3 months.
Okay. Now you've had a number of hearings. You've been fighting this and fighting them for several years now. What's been the result of all of those hearings?
Well, I finally, once we got to Superior Court, I won back in May. On May 5th, the judge ruled for me to be reinstated, full back pay, being rearmed. We were very happy with that, of course. And we had a letter from the prosecutor the whole time saying that they would agree with whatever a judge's decision was. Well, when I won, the assistant prosecutor turned around and said, no, you know what? I don't care. I'm not rearming him. We will never rearm him. So we had to file a motion to show cause against them, which we had last Thursday. We won that. And so now apparently Hightstown has appealed the decision to the appellate court. So now it looks like I'll be waiting for the appellate decision.
Okay. So this saga has now taken years. And although you have won at every level, they continue to basically continue this vendetta against you.
That's correct.
What's the future look like?
Well, I'm going to continue to fight this, Randy. This was so wrong. It was a career I loved. I did nothing wrong. And if asking for help is doing something wrong, that's a very bad message to send to law enforcement.
Well, I'd have to say that's for damn sure.
I have to continue to fight this because we need case law established so that officers across the nation, this will not happen to them. We had an officer in our county that just committed suicide a couple weeks ago.
Yes, yes.
And till this day, I wonder if it's because he knows what's going on with me and he wouldn't ask for help.
Well, this is one of the things that is facing law enforcement officers all over the nation, that if they ask for psychological help or they say they have some post-traumatic stress, there are often no protections for these men and women, and you are an example of just that.
Yeah, and thank God I have a strong backing. My family. We this has actually just made us closer, and we have a foundation that we run and where we try to help people, and I've dived into that a lot in these last few years, and. I just keep trying to fight the good fight.
And when it comes down to it, why do you think that this lieutenant, who was actually the guy in charge of the police department, what do you think his motivation is? Because he's clearly the one that's pushed this whole thing.
Oh, yeah. Again, I just think this goes back to, way back when we were friends and I started this canine unit. And, like I said, it just seems like after that, we started to drift apart and
you were getting a lot of notoriety from that. You were getting a lot of publicity.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was being used by the county, the DEA, surrounding towns, towns in the next county over. My canine and I had a pretty good, we were a pretty good team and, word traveled.
It is. You think that this whole vendetta began out of some professional jealousy?
It's very, very possible.
Well, one thing that I can tell you from my years of experience in both a small agency and a larger agency, one of the largest in the country, is that personality issues between administrators and working cops has often resulted in unfair disciplines, even terminations, and that is what I refer to as administrative corruption. You know, the term corruption is is defined as the misuse of public power for private benefit. That's corruption. Well, administrative corruption is not much different. It is utilizing administrative power for personal reasons. And it sounds to me like that's the situation that's going on with you. I can tell you this, that I know you have been fighting this tremendous fight. It's been expensive. You've been hiring attorneys at your own cost, but you do have the backing of your PBA, do you not?
The state PBA, that's correct, yes.
Well, that's very important.
Yeah, and early on, Randy, it was a shame because my local actually turned against me. And I actually had to go to the state PBA, and most of the members of my department actually ended up getting suspended from the PBA. I mean, that's how bad this was.
Well, once again, I wanted to say this, that I understand what you've been going through. I admire your tenacity and the fact that you have not given up. Most people would have by now. And the fact that you are not only fighting, but being victorious on virtually every one of these hearings, I think is a demonstration of hopefully justice will be done. You will get your job back. But let me ask you this: even if you get your job back, would you actually go back to work there?
Well, unfortunately, I don't have much choice. It's not like we're like a big department where I could go to a different borough or, you know, a different sector. We're one square mile town. There are a few departments where I know, you know, gotten to know the chiefs over the years from doing canine jobs, and they're expressing interest in me once I get past all this. So I'm hoping maybe that might be an option for me where I can just get my things back, my gun back, and then just go maybe to another department.
I can't imagine going back and working under those conditions. But I want to thank you, Frank, for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I wish you the best in your endeavors, and I really hope that you are victorious and you get your job back. It's a job that I know you love, and you've been doing it for all the right reasons.
Thank you, Randy. Thank you. I'll keep you posted as things progress.
Thank you. Please do.
End of watch.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we honor those men and women of the law enforcement field who have given their lives in the line of duty. This week, I have one name to read. Lieutenant Heath Meyer of the Oklahoma Highway Patrol. Lieutenant Heath Meyer succumbed to injuries sustained 10 days earlier when he was struck by a patrol car on I-35 near Southwest 27th Street in Moore, Oklahoma. He had deployed stop sticks as other troopers pursued a vehicle on the interstate. Two of the patrol cars collided as they attempted to avoid the stop sticks. One of the patrol cars then struck Lieutenant Meyer. The vehicle being pursued continued to flee. However, the driver was taken into custody later in the night and charged in connection with the incident. Lieutenant Meyer was transported to the University of Oklahoma Medical Center, where he remained until succumbing to his injury. He had served with the Oklahoma Highway Patrol for 12 years. He is survived by his wife and two daughters. His end of watch, Monday, July 24th, 2017. May he rest in peace. If this was television and you could see me right now, you know that I'd be wearing
a Warrior 12 t-shirt. And you're asking yourself, what the hell is a Warrior 12 t-shirt? That is, unless you've been listening to this show for a while. Then you would know that they are the coolest police t-shirts around. Warrior 12 is the clothing line for Blue Lives Matter. So we got the Blue Lives Matter t-shirts. We have all kinds of other different logos and sayings on them, and they are very, very cool. So go to warrior12.com. That's warrior12.com. You could check out the entire line and wear some pretty cool shirts. Hey, I want to thank you so much for tuning in this week to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. You know, we couldn't have done this without our sponsors. That is BlueLivesMatter.blue. That's the news and information website for Blue Lives Matter. JSD Protective Services, which is the best security company I know. And also Warrior 12. Warrior12.com is the clothing line and the merchandise line for Blue Lives Matter. They got the best t-shirts. They got these really cool things called Yeti cups. I just found out about them, and all kinds of other cool stuff. So go to warrior12.com and check out their stuff. Also, in case you didn't know it, I'm an author, and I've got a number of books. If you go to amazon.com, put my name in there, and you'll find all my books, including A Cop's Life, True Blue, and all my other stuff. So check it out, and thanks so much. I will see you. Well, I won't see you, but you'll hear me next week on Blue Lives Radio. Thanks.